Evacuations in South Florida. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News. A high-rise apartment building in North Miami Beach was cleared out last night because of unsafe conditions. The Crestview Towers is located about 5 miles from the condo complex in Surfside that collapsed 10 days ago. It's the first building to be evacuated since officials started examining older high-rises. In Surfside, a painstaking search and rescue continues.
Two more bodies have been pulled out, according to Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine Cava.
We now have 22 confirmed deaths and 126 unaccounted for.
Several lawsuits have been filed, many against the condo association. One is a class action suit, and the attorney in that case has obtained video from his client, a building resident, taken in 2018 of a leak in the garage showing the area in disrepair. Earlier this week, a letter written in April by the condo board president was made public. It said the building was in desperate need of repairs worth $15 million.
Fox's Jessica Rosenthal. Weather has hampered the rescue effort before and may do so again as Hurricane Elsa swirls in the Caribbean.
There's hurricane warnings and watches and across the Caribbean region. So for much of Dominican Republic and Haiti, as well as Jamaica and portions of Cuba, nothing in place for the U.S. yet. It's just too far out for Florida.
John Cangialosi with the National Hurricane Center. Heavy rains that triggered a mudslide may have buried dozens of homes in Japan. Officials say at least 19 people are missing in a town about 60 miles southwest of Tokyo. Cyber hackers that may have ties to Russia appear to be behind another ransomware attack targeting at least 200 U.S. businesses. The FBI has linked the attack to the same group that targeted a U.S. meat supplier. America's listening to Fox News. The Supreme Court won't hear the case of a florist who refused service for a same-sex wedding.
The justices are leaving in place a lower court's ruling that the owner of Arlene's Flowers in Washington State broke the state's anti-discrimination law by refusing to provide flowers for a customer's same-sex wedding. Washington Supreme Court reviewed a state commission decision and concluded it did not act with animosity toward Baronelle Stutzman's religion. The Supreme Court declined to hear an appeal. Justices Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Neil Gorsuch indicated they would have agreed to hear the case. Four justices are needed for the court to take up a challenge. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
In a statement, Stutzman called the Supreme Court denial devastating, and she claims the decision will delay justice for others. Instead of hotel rooms, hundreds of first responders working at the site of a building collapse in Florida will be housed in staterooms. Royal Caribbean Cruise Line is offering the use of a ship for the next month or so. The Explorer of the Seas, which is docked at Port Miami, will host about 600 rescue workers. They'll receive individual rooms, laundry service, and hot meals. Hotel rooms are scarce in Florida because of the 4th of July holiday. Gasoline is also scarce in a handful of spots across the country thanks to a shortage of tanker truck drivers. Those drivers need special training, and many driving schools were closed during the pandemic. Meantime, drivers who do fill up are paying more.
Gas prices reaching a seven-year high as some 48 million Americans hit the road this weekend. The national average, $3.12 a gallon, nearly a dollar higher than a year ago. Lowest price, Louisiana at $2.75. The highest, California, where drivers in L.A. pay $4.79 for regular.
Fox's William Lajeunesse. I'm Pam Puso, Fox News.
Right now, no issues on the Beltway, both in Virginia and in Maryland. In Cheverly, Route 50, John Hanson Highway eastbound, all lanes are blocked for a police investigation, and the traffic is being diverted onto Columbia Park Road. In Centerville, on 66, westbound, at the Centerville exit, exit 53, that exit ramp is closed for construction. Follow the detour exit at Braddock Road. And on Route 50, eastbound, in Sandy Point, there is a crash. Right lane is blocked at the toll plaza of the Bay Bridge. They are preparing to do two-way traffic on the westbound span of the Bay Bridge. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies this morning. We will see some afternoon clouds, though. Have the chance for a couple of showers to pop up through the afternoon and into the early evening hours. High temperatures today around the 80-degree mark. Tonight, lows back in the 60s downtown. We'll see them in the 50s in the outlying suburbs. For the 4th of July, a few morning showers, I think remaining through about midday. Then becoming partly cloudy should be great for the 4th itself. High temperatures in the mid-80s. By the time the fireworks go, should be around the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Saturday Morning Update. 105.9
FM, WMAL. Good morning and a happy 4th of July, Independence Day weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer. And we are very pleased to have you spending at least a little part of your 4th of July holiday weekend with us here on the Saturday Morning Update. A lot to cover for a holiday weekend. Oh, what the president's been up to, what the former president's been up to. You may have heard the White House attempting to put the spin on things. The jobs report out Friday, the number of jobs went up in terms of the monthly increase, but so did the unemployment rate, so I guess we can call that a draw. If you're traveling this weekend, you've been to the gas pump recently. Well, if you're in California, you're up to almost $5 a gallon for gas in California. The national average this weekend, $3.12 a gallon. That is $1 higher than a year ago. All right. Inflation numbers reported to be up 5% in May. However, the White House, putting the spin on it yesterday with Jen Psaki, asked a question by Peter Ducey about a tweet that came out from the White House where they claimed that the cost of a July 4th barbecue was like 16 cents cheaper this year than it was last year. So you'll hear Jen Psaki explain that. And keep in mind that if you're going to be driving to get to that barbecue that's 16 cents cheaper, you'd have been paying a dollar more a gallon. Here's how it went.
Subject, the official White House account tweeted yesterday, the cost of a 4th of July cookout is down 16 cents from last year. 16 cents?
There has been a reduction in some of the costs of key components of the 4th of July, 4th of July barbecue. So that was what the tweet was noting.
So does the White House think that 16 cents off a barbecue has more of an impact on people's lives than gas being a dollar more this time?
I would say if you don't like hot dogs, you may not care of the reduction of costs. You don't have to like hot dogs.
But can't buy a hot dog for 16 cents.
A reduction of...
Okay, nice try, Jen. Peter got you on that one. You can tell. Every time he asks a question, you can just watch the look on her face. Watch the body language from the White House Press Secretary, Jen Psaki. You can tell she is not real pleased with Peter Ducey. He's kind of like the Jim Acosta of the new press corps and the new administration. I didn't mean that, Peter. I'm sorry. I should never equate you to Jim Acosta. Other things going on. You will find this interesting. It is the 100th anniversary of the Communist Chinese Party. And China was out there with some very bold comments this week about adversaries, and we're going to be talking about that with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer later on this morning. We're going to talk with Tony also about the United States striking Iran-backed militia group in Syria. They hit those targets earlier in the week. We'll find out what was behind that, the Pentagon and President Biden taking that action. Some interesting, I was going to save this for later, but I got to do it now. What the heck? Some interesting ratings are out, cable news ratings, and we're going to talk a little bit about this with Jennifer Harper in terms of with President Trump out of the White House, cable news, especially MSNBC and CNN, are not doing as well as they did when they had Donald Trump as a target in the White House. Now, why do I say that? What am I talking about? Well, according to Forbes magazine, CNN has dropped 68% as Fox News crushes the competition. That's from Forbes. That's Q2, the second quarter, cable news ratings. Brian Stelter, who does a weekend show on CNN called Reliable Sources, his numbers, his ratings, have dropped 53% since January. Wow. MSNBC is down 37%. So you got to figure these guys are missing the Donald in a big way. Now, I've taken a shot at CNN, and in fairness, I will say that CNN, tomorrow night, the 4th of July, CNN is airing a special. It's a music special, believe it or not, and they will have REO Speedwagon, Nelly, Brad Paisley, Trisha Yearwood, The Beach Boys, Black Eyed Peas, Billy Ray Cyrus, Chicago, Blues Traveler, Foreigner, Sammy Hagar, Tasha Cobbs Leonard, and more. Quite a 4th of July celebration on CNN. Maybe that's a way to get the ratings back up for one night out of the year. Good luck on it. What else is going on? Well, you may have seen the photos of Hunter Biden and Joe Biden at the Naval Observatory entertaining Mexican businessmen. That's right. Joe Biden never knew anything about what Hunter was up to, except for the fact that there was a little holiday gathering when Joe Biden was the vice president at the residence, which, of course, is at the Naval Observatory. And he is there in the photo with Hunter and Carlos Slim and several other Mexican businessmen. But obviously, Hunter never did tell Joe why were they there. He never mentioned it. Never said a word about why they were there, because Joe Biden never knew anything about Hunter Biden's business dealings. So another interesting set of numbers came out this week, and this is from ABC News and The Washington Post. Okay? Headline, Biden is rated poorly on handling crime. Alternative approaches win broad favor, according to the ABC News Washington Post poll on crime. First paragraph, the number of Americans seeing crime as an extremely serious problem in the U.S. is at a more than 20-year high. President Joe Biden is underwater in trust to handle it, and broad majorities in an ABC News Washington Post poll favor alternative crime-fighting strategies to address it. Now, let's get into the numbers a little bit. It's kind of interesting because in the survey, they were talking about violent crime reduction strategies, okay? The number one strategy in the poll, increasing funding for economic opportunities in poor areas. At number two, 65% of the people thought that using social workers to help police would be helpful. 55% thought increasing police funding would be helpful. 51% felt that stricter enforcement of current gun laws would be helpful. And only 46% felt that stricter gun control laws would be helpful. So it's interesting there. It wasn't a choice of one or the other. You see, you had 75% for one, 65% for another, 55%. So it's not like which one is the way to go. It's like, do you like these? And, you know, everybody likes them to a certain extent. So it's a little kind of misleading in a way to say that, the most popular one was increasing funding for economic opportunities in poor areas. I mean, I think obviously we'd all feel that that's going to help to reduce violent crime, as well as increasing police funding, as well as stricter enforcement of current gun laws. So a little strange there in the way they laid that one out. But I think what's interesting to find is that 28% of Americans see crime in the U.S. as an extremely serious problem. And you gotta love the Post and ABC News, right? Here's how they qualify that sentence, right? 28% of Americans see crime in the U.S. as an extremely serious problem, comma, a relatively small group. I don't know, 1 in 4 is 28% of America, a relatively small group. 5% of America's a relatively small group. 10 or 15% is a relatively small group. I'm not so sure that 28% of Americans is a relatively small group, but I guess it's all relative. 38% of adults overall approve of how Biden is handling the issue of crime. 48% disapprove of Joe Biden's handling of the crime problem, according to the Washington Post ABC News poll. 6% of Republicans approve of Biden's work on crime. 74% of Democrats, that's obvious that it's going to go that way with the partisans. However, where do you think the independents show up in those numbers? Well, only 35% of independents approve of Joe Biden's work on crime. So interesting poll numbers. I'm sure they're looking at those at the White House going, huh, we got to fix this before November 2022. It is 6:19. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Lots more to come. And we're going to be getting into the situation with the Trump Organization versus the New York prosecutors. And we'll have some of that for you next. But first off, we head to the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, on the inner loop and on the outer loop from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, you will go bridge to bridge and not hit your brakes. All the lanes are clear. Traveling between the two beltways on 95 and on the BW Parkway, no delays on the northbound side or on the southbound side. Heads up on Route 50, John Hanson Highway and Chevrolet. The eastbound lanes are blocked right now for police investigation. And if you're doing a beach run, they are currently preparing the westbound span of the Bay Bridge for two-way traffic. There are no delays on either shoreline on the Bay Bridge. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies this morning. We will see some afternoon clouds, though. Have the chance for a couple of showers to pop up through the afternoon and into the early evening hours. High temperatures today around the 80-degree mark. Tonight, lows back in the 60s downtown. We'll see them in the 50s in the outlying suburbs. For the 4th of July, a few morning showers, I think remaining through about midday. Then becoming partly cloudy should be great for the 4th itself. High temperatures into the mid-80s. By the time the fireworks go, should be around the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Ligg at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital. Very pleasant outside. 6:20 on the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. The Saturday Morning Update, 4th of July holiday weekend. I'm Rick Feller. Thank you for being with us this morning. And it's interesting when you see President Biden, he gets kind of cranky with the media people. And you would think the way he's got them set up and he's got the media, with the exception of like two or three media people, they're completely on his side. I mean, gushing reviews of the First Lady. I think the First Lady is on the cover of Vogue magazine. I'm not sure that Melania Trump was ever afforded that luxury. But he's got the media in his pocket, but he still gets irritated with them. And not just Peter Doocy at Fox News. And he was speaking yesterday, and he was trying to run the spin on the jobs numbers and say how great everything's going. They're calling it the Biden boom, soon to be the Biden bust. But for the moment, the White House is calling it the Biden boom, with the stock market up and the economy recovering from COVID-19. Duh. What do you expect? Of course, there's going to be a boom. But he's asked at this press conference yesterday, he's asked about Afghanistan and the fact that the United States has left Bagram Air Force Base, a very strategic position in our efforts in the Mideast. But the U.S. has abandoned the base at this point as we pull out of Afghanistan. He was asked about that, and he gets a little cranky here.
I'm not going to answer any more questions on Afghanistan. Look, it's 4th of July. I'm concerned that you guys are asking me questions that I'll answer next week, but on this holiday weekend, I'm going to celebrate it. There's great things happening. Economy's growing faster than any time in 40 years. We've got a record number of new jobs. COVID deaths are down 90%. Wages are up faster than any time in 15 years. We're bringing our troops home. We have all across America, people are going to ball games and doing good things. This is a good. I'll answer all your negative questions, not negative, your legitimate questions.
Okay, whichever, Joe, either it's negative or legitimate, we're not sure. Really appreciate that big hearty thanks to Donald Trump for Operation Warp Speed so that we go get out there and celebrate the 4th of July, but he kind of forgot where that came from. But that's okay. It is what it is. What do you expect from a Democratic administration? The Republicans would do the same thing. So anyway, politics is politics. Now, speaking of politics, you might have heard about this one. Cyrus Vance is a prosecutor in the state of New York, as is Letitia James, a big deal in the Manhattan Southern District in New York. So what they're doing is going after the Trump Organization, Donald Trump, anybody that's anywhere near Donald Trump. So they've taken years, and $10 million are the estimates, to come up with an indictment this week against the CFO of the Trump Organization. And they're going after him for not reporting perks that he received as the CFO of the Trump Organization. Alan Weisselberg, with the Trump Organization for 40-some years. And supposedly there were some things like the car that he was driving and some of the other perks that he got. Some question about a residence, but that apparently he stopped the residency issue back in 2013. But they spent all this time and all this money to come up with something that you would typically find in an IRS audit, as opposed to a pair of high-profile prosecutors with an axe to grind against Donald Trump. So they indicted Alan Weisselberg this week. They did the perp walk, and then he walked out on his own recognizance. That shows you how serious the crime is, right? Walks out on his own recognizance. They pulled his passport, so he couldn't go on vacation, but he left on his own personal recognizance. Well, Alan Futeris is a spokesman for the Trump Organization, and here's how he characterized things outside the court.
It's not appropriate, and quite frankly, it sets a precedent. I think in 244 years, we have not had a local prosecutor go after a former president of the United States, or his employees or his company.
So we're going to talk in detail with Jim Trusty, our legal counsel, about the whole question of the appropriateness of the prosecution and the indictments and the amount of time they're spending on it. And I want to put it in perspective because I think we were all furious at an event that happened in Annapolis, Maryland this week. Federal and state authorities now offering more than $20,000 in rewards. Why? Well, it's to apprehend the shooter who took the life of a Texas mother of a United States Naval Academy midshipman. He was a candidate. She was here as he was inducted into the Naval Academy. She sat outside of a hotel in Annapolis. She was shot and killed by a stray bullet after dropping her son off at the Naval Academy. What in the world is going on? And they take $10 million. Now, I know it's a, you know, different state and yada, yada, yada. But when you waste $10 million to go after a guy for a tax violation and you have crime in the streets here in this area and you have crime in New York, I'm not sure if you heard these stories out of New York this week. How about this? A newly commissioned Marine Corps officer suffered injuries when he was shot in the back by a stray bullet in New York City's Times Square. It happened last Sunday evening. He was 21 years old. He was struck at about 5:15 in the afternoon walking near the intersection of West 45th Street and Broadway. He was there with his family. You know where that is. I mean, that's right at Times Square. That's flooded with people, typically. Well, the NYPD searching for the suspect on Monday. Well, maybe if Cyrus Vance hadn't wasted $10 million and Letitia James hadn't wasted $10 million going after Trump, maybe they could have put that money toward preventing crime in where? New York City. Hello. You also saw the child that was shot in Times Square a couple of weeks ago. It's crazy what's going on in New York. You know, defund the police? I don't think so. It's 6:28. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL, and we have got a lot to cover this morning. As I mentioned, we'll talk with Jennifer Harper, got some interesting poll numbers coming up, interesting reflections on some of our American presidents, including Ronald Reagan. We will be talking with Jim Trusty, as I mentioned, our legal counsel. We'll also ask Jim Trusty about Bill Cosby. You heard that he, surprisingly and a shock to a lot of people, was freed after his appeal in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. We'll find out what's behind that with Jim Trusty this morning. We're going to be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer about China's Communist Party, the strength of the party, where it goes next. We'll ask Tony about the Biden airstrikes, and also we'll ask Tony about the strategy in giving up the Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan. So that's on the way here on WMAO. We're going to have John Gizzi with us this morning. Biden and Trump, both on the campaign trail, and we're over a year and a half away from the elections here. So we're going to find out what they're up to this morning. And also, we'll talk to John Gizzi about the legacy of Donald Rumsfeld, who passed away this week. We're going to be getting into it also with KT McFarland this morning. We're going to get her reaction to China and also the Biden administration's policies. And that's all on the way. So do stay with us. The 4th of July holiday weekend right here on the Saturday Morning Update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
In the news at 6:30, a ransomware attack has paralyzed the networks of at least 200 U.S. companies, and that's according to a cybersecurity researcher whose company was responding to the incident. John Hammond of the firm Huntress Labs says a major Russian-speaking ransomware syndicate appears to be behind the attack. He says the criminals in the Revel gang targeted a software supplier using its network management software as a conduit to spread the ransomware more widely. They say that the ransom being asked of some of these 200 companies is $45,000. The two-decade war in Afghanistan has given U.S. spies a perch for keeping tabs on terror groups that might once again use the beleaguered nation to plan attacks against the U.S. homeland, but that will end soon. The withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan, leaving intelligence agencies scrambling for other ways to monitor and stop terrorists. They'll have to depend more on technology and allies in the Afghan government, even as they face an increasingly uncertain future once U.S. and NATO forces depart. Hurricane Elsa is racing toward Haiti and the Dominican Republic today. It's threatening to unleash flooding and landslides before taking aim at Cuba and Florida. It's a Category 1 storm. It's located about 500 miles southeast of Santo Domingo. The hurricane is expected to become a tropical storm after hitting Cuba, and it does threaten Florida as a tropical storm expected by Tuesday morning in South Florida. It's 6:34. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. LBD's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Heads up in Chevrolet on Route 50 eastbound the John Hanson Highway. All the lanes are blocked right now for a police investigation between Columbia Park Road and 202. All the traffic is being diverted onto Columbia Park Road. No delays on the Maryland side of the Beltway. Now into Virginia. The Virginia side of the Beltway is clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. Heads up on 66. Westbound, there is a crash. Left lane is blocked after 123. Also on 66 westbound, there is construction going on the Centerville exit, exit 52. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies this morning. We will see some afternoon clouds, though. Have the chance for a couple of showers to pop up through the afternoon and into the early evening hours. High temperatures today around the 80-degree mark. Tonight, lows back in the 60s downtown. We'll see them in the 50s in the outlying suburbs. For the 4th of July, a few morning showers, I think remaining through about midday. Then becoming partly cloudy should be great for the 4th itself. High temperatures in the mid-80s. By the time the fireworks go, should be around the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:35, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Hey, DMV, it's Dan Bongino back again on WMAL weekdays from noon to 3.
It is the Saturday Morning Update and a happy Independence Day weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper joins us. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times, and a pleasure to have you with us on a holiday weekend.
Well, thanks so much, and happy 4th of July, everybody.
Well, it is Independence Day, and, you know, it makes us think about American history, makes us think about our presidents. I think there was a poll that came out midweek that talked about the most popular presidents. Ronald Reagan in the top 10 of those popular presidents, and I know you wrote about him this week.
Yes, I did. Usually on 4th of July, I like to revisit some of Reagan's speeches and so forth. So let's go back about four decades exactly, July 4th, 1981. And what Ronald Reagan had to say on the 4th of July, and he said, let the 4th of July always be a reminder that here in this land, for the first time, it was decided that man is born with certain God-given rights, that government is only a convenience created and managed by the people with no powers of its own except those voluntarily granted to it by the people. We sometimes forget that great truth, and we never should, because putting people first has always been America's secret weapon. It's that we've kept the secret of our revolution alive, a spirit that drives us to dream and dare and take great risks for a greater good. He says, I'm convinced that we're getting that spirit back. The nation is pulling together. We're looking to the future with new hope and confidence, and we know we can make America great again by putting the destiny of this nation back in the hands of the people. As Dwight Eisenhower once said, there is nothing wrong with America that faith, love of freedom, intelligence, and energy of her citizens cannot cure. He was right. If we stick together and remain true to our ideals, we can be sure that America's greatest days lie ahead. Again, that's Reagan, July 4th, 1981.
So let's hope some White House staffer was able to put your article in the president's media summary that he gets every day.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something?
Well, for a more contemporary presidential look at the 4th of July, what did former President Donald Trump have to say?
Yes, well, let us venture back to 2019. You'll remember that Independence Day. That was when President Trump was down at the, or former President Trump, then President Trump was down at the Lincoln Memorial. They had an incredible flyover. The weather wasn't that great, but they had a pretty wonderful turnout there. This is what he told the people that were there. He said, we will never forget that we are Americans and that the future belongs to us. The future belongs to the brave, the strong, the proud, and the free. We are one people chasing one dream and one magnificent destiny. Nearly 250 years ago, a volunteer army of farmers and shopkeepers, blacksmiths, merchants, and militiamen risked life and limb to secure American liberty and self-government. This evening, we have witnessed the noble might of the warriors who continue that legacy. They guard our birthright with vigilance and fierce devotion to the flag and our great country. Now we must go forward as a nation with that same unity of purpose. As long as we stay true to our course, as long as we remember our great history, as long as we never, ever stop fighting for a better future, then there will be nothing that America cannot do. And that's Donald Trump on July 4th, 2019.
That's another one that should have gone in the media briefing for the president. I'm sure he would have gotten a big kick out of that one. And that's after they rained on South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem's parade. You talked about that a couple of weeks ago. The idea was to do a big 4th of July celebration at Mount Rushmore, as they did last year. But I guess since she has been talked about for a potential presidential candidate, no use giving her any good photo ops on the 4th of July now, is there?
Yeah, really.
So turning to the former president, he's no longer in the White House. What is happening in the media in terms of the numbers?
Well, let me tell you something. The media absolutely misses former President Donald Trump with a big former before him. Everybody's still calling him President Trump. But his absence from the White House and the policymaking has put an end to all that endless coverage and automatic audiences. Because every story was Trump-centric. It was always about something that he did or didn't do or thought they said. It went on and on. But now he's not there, or at least not in the same capacity. And Axios, which is always reliable for pretty good research, they have come out with a new report about what has happened to the media after Donald Trump left office. And here's what they say. The boring news cycle deals a blow to partisan media. They say in the months since former President Donald Trump left office, media companies' readership numbers are plunging, and publishers that rely on partisan ideological warfare has taken an especially big hit. Again, this is coming from Axios, and they say this is why it matters. Outlets that are most dependent on controversy to stir up resentments have struggled to find a foothold in the Biden era, according to an Axios analysis of publishers' readership and engagement trends. And they have a lot of numbers to support all this, but I think everybody already knows that Trump was an automatic front page story, and the media audience for the both the left and the right leaning print, online, and broadcast sources fell at the rate ranging from 16.7% to 43.8%, according to these study periods that Axios has put into motion following Mr. Trump's exodus from the White House. And these dates were August 2020 to January 2021, and again February 2021 to May. And so the Trump-dependent media, Rick, is feeling the pinch.
You know, the funny thing is, I still, on my Apple iPhone, I still get probably 30% of the stories that come in are Trump stories. I mean, they're going after anybody that ever worked for him. They're looking at all kinds of different stories to have Trump in the headline so they can trash him. It's just
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, ratings.
Of course, the liberals and the progressives in the Democratic Party are in command in the country. You often look at cultural moments, and what struck you this week?
Well, I wish you could say it struck me, but actually it struck Jim Garrity. He's a columnist over at the National Review, and he made a very interesting observation about progressives and liberals, and he says that the left has a pretend sense of doom. That's an intriguing thought, isn't it? And this is what he has to say. He cites the fact that President Trump always gave a lot of progressives a, quote, devil figure to rally their ranks against, and they needed that figure. This is what Mr. Garrity is saying at the National Review. He says progressives like to think of themselves as scrappy underdogs, but quite a few of them live very comfortable lives. They realize that they have $12 per pint ice cream in their freezers while noticing more homeless people sleeping on grates not far from their brownstone townhouses, and they feel guilty about that. He also says they need to feel as if they're at risk, too, that they need to feel as if they share in the struggles of the less fortunate, the sense of being part of a noble political resistance to a white nationalist, fascist, insert other bad label here, occupying force, gives their lives a sense of consequence and meaning that these individuals otherwise cannot find. Those heavy-hitting words are coming again from Jim Garrity of the National Review, who's complaining that the left has a pretend sense of doom.
So if you're headed to a picnic or a barbecue over the 4th of July holiday weekend and somehow the conversation drifts into politics, Jennifer has a new word you can drop on the people you're talking to.
Yeah, every time there is a kind of a new word or a phrase out there, I always put it in the Inside the Beltway lexicon, good for cocktail parties and barbecues perhaps. But the word this week is DeSantis derangement syndrome. Of course, this
already?
Is a play on, yeah, already, that's right. It's a play on the old Trump derangement syndrome, meaning that the media, as we talked about previously, they just couldn't get away from Trump ever. And now it looks like they can't get away from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And this very handy term has been originated with PJ Media columnist Rick Moran. And he's taken a very close look at the news media's negative treatment of the Florida governor already out there in fine form. And, of course, a lot of people think he's a likely GOP presidential prospect or vice presidential prospect in 2024. Anyway, he says, naturally, the media is getting an early start warming up their smear machinery against DeSantis. Their problem so far has been poor marksmanship caused by faulty ammunition. And that's coming from Rick Moran over at PJ Media.
Say, UFOs, we saw the report, which was sort of a bust last week, that everybody was expecting to have pictures of little green men in the report, but nada. So you do have a poll on it, though, right?
Yes, of course. I always have a poll on everything. And, again, early morning numbers for our listeners today. This is an Economist YouGov poll conducted June 26 through 29, very current, and they discovered that 63% of Americans agree that the U.S. government knows more about UFOs than it is telling the public. Well, 67% of Republicans, 67% of independents, and 63% of Democrats all agree with that, and another 10% overall say that the U.S. government is telling the public everything it knows. And that's according to another 6% of Republicans, 10% of independents, and 14% of Democrats agree with that. And last but not least, 27% overall are not sure about the issue. And kind of way across the board, that's Republicans, independents all agree right on that level. Again, that's a YouGov poll thinking, you know, you guys know more than you're telling us. So we'll wait and see on that one, Rick.
So many people turn to radio and television during the pandemic, but what about publications like the comics? Are they still in style?
Well, we got some comic relief, and I mean that in quite a real way. I like to follow some of the popular trends here in terms of what people are buying. And during the pandemic, with all the public discords and everything else that's been going on, the comic industry has done very, very well. This is according to ICV2 and Comicron. These are both industry sources that measure and track the sales of comics, graphic novels, and other pop culture products. Here's what they have to say. Combined comics and graphic novel sales hit a new high in the pandemic year of 2020. They say that the total comic graphic novel sales, $1.28 billion in 2020. This is a 6% increase over sales in 2019. They say that the collectible side of the comic business was also strong. This means those who love those old comics, if you got them, people are still crazy about them. The collector market flourished during the year, allowing comic shops to earn significant revenue from their back issue inventories. That's coming from John Jackson Miller. He is a lead data analyst with Comicron, tracking all of the comics and graphic novels for us. But that's we do get some comic relief anyway, Rick.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway, The Washington Times. Have a fabulous Independence Day holiday weekend. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, have a good weekend, everyone. Thanks a lot.
6:50, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. So what the heck happened in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court with the Bill Cosby case? That's next with Jim Trusty, but first we're off to the WMAL Traffic Center. LBD's there this morning.
In Virginia, on the Beltway, inner loop and outer loop, I'm looking in the traffic cameras and I'm not seeing any construction being set up. On 66 westbound, there is a crash. Three left lanes are blocked after exit 60, Virginia 123. Also on 66 westbound at the Centerville exit, exit 52, that is closed for construction. And heads up on Route 50, John Hanson Highway in Cheverly. All the eastbound lanes are blocked for a police investigation between Columbia Park Road and 202, and they're diverting all the traffic onto Columbia Park Road. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny skies this morning. We will see some afternoon clouds, though. Have the chance for a couple of showers to pop up through the afternoon and into the early evening hours. High temperatures today around the 80-degree mark. Tonight, lows back in the 60s downtown. We'll see them in the 50s in the outlying suburbs. For the 4th of July, a few morning showers, I think remaining through about midday, then becoming partly cloudy. Should be great for the 4th itself. High temperatures into the mid-80s. By the time the fireworks go, should be around the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:51 on the Saturday morning update. It's the Saturday morning update. It is Independence Day weekend. Glad you've joined us and always glad to have Jim Trusty join us. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, and he is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick, and happy 4th of July.
Thank you. Well, it's Independence Day for Bill Cosby, and a lot of people were stunned at the decision of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. But tell us what happened here with the prosecutor.
Well, it's really kind of a unique and maybe very sad outcome here. But the Court of Appeals, you know, everyone expected them to rule on this issue about multiple victims testifying in a single victim trial. And we can circle back to that a little bit. But that's not the issue that they really decided here. What they looked at was the actions of a district attorney years ago by the name of Bruce Castor, and you'll remember him from the recent impeachment proceedings defending President Trump. He was faced with a situation where Bill Cosby was being sued civilly by a number of these victims, and he realized that he had the ability to help the civil case by essentially announcing that he had no ability to charge any criminal case. And it's an unusual moment for a prosecutor to do that. I think his intentions were good. The result turns out to be disastrous. His intention was to basically overcome Cosby's Fifth Amendment privilege, because otherwise in those civil suits, when Bill Cosby was asked questions by these different victims' lawyers, he'd be able to say, I have to take the Fifth Amendment because I have a plausible claim of a risk of prosecution. Well, publicly announcing that you are not going to be able to prosecute Bill Cosby effectively was immunizing him, telling him he didn't have a Fifth Amendment privilege, and therefore he could answer all these questions, and he did. And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court basically said you can't turn around after immunizing him, even with a different district attorney in office, and undo the promise and use that evidence from the depositions against him, because he said very damning things in the depositions about quaaludes and having women alone in hotel rooms. So they basically said this is fundamentally unfair, and the case was reversed and dismissed.
Why did it take all this time? Why didn't that come out initially in the trial?
Well, you know, the issue was actually before the trial court. There was a preliminary hearing on this issue of dismissing the case, or at least eliminating the evidence from those depositions. And the trial judge felt that it was very murky, that it was not formal immunity that was pursued through the statute, in other words, through a judge, and that therefore that judge found there was no due process violation and allowed the evidence to come in. The intermediate appellate court, the Superior Court of Pennsylvania, agreed and said, from this record, we think it's murky and we don't have a problem with it. The Supreme Court looked at those same facts and same record and said, look, you can't hide behind procedural niceties and say, well, he didn't do it properly. The bottom line is the prosecutor publicly announced that there was no ability to prosecute Bill Cosby. Cosby relied on that, answered questions, and the questions were then used in the criminal case. And they felt that was fundamentally unfair.
Well, Jim, from a layman's perspective, for somebody that heard the news, was shocked and maybe irritated that they heard that, he's walking out free, do you, as an attorney, feel that this was a fair outcome for Bill Cosby by the law?
Yeah, it's a tough question. I mean, it is a reasonable outcome. I mean, I don't think that the appellate court, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania, can be viewed as doing something that's outrageous here. There were some pretty difficult issues surrounding that immunity given by Bruce Castor. But at the same time, I think most of us got to a point in the court of public opinion, at least, where when we started to hear the same story from dozens of women, we felt the moral culpability was pretty clear, even if the legal challenges were tough. And I think it's pretty sad to think that this guy got away with victimizing dozens and dozens of women.
Jim, announcement from the Department of Justice and the Attorney General this week that they are announcing a moratorium on the death penalty. Tell us a little bit about what's behind that.
Yeah, there's a real tortured history here, and I followed it closely because I used to be on the Attorney General's Capital Review Committee, where we would, assess all of the incoming potential death penalty cases. So I feel like I at least had a pretty firsthand account for a number of years of how this was working. During the Obama years, they essentially had a moratorium as well. They didn't announce it as a moratorium. They basically struggled with this idea of the death penalty protocol, which literally means like how the executions are carried out. There were civil suits that were being filed against the drug companies that were a part of that process. And essentially, Obama's administration decided to hide behind that inaction, to not take action to update the protocol. And effectively, it meant there were no executions for all 8 years. Now what you have is a more affirmative step. You've got the current attorney general announcing that he's got concerns about racial disparity, about innocent defendants, and that he wants to take a long look at it. And starting point, there has never been an example of a federal death penalty prosecution where the defendant was later exonerated. We've heard these stories across the country from time to time in state courts. There's no history of that in the federal court system. And I think it's a reflection of a very serious review process that they go through to ensure that really only the worst of the worst ones are being pursued. We're talking Boston Marathon bomber, Charleston Church massacre, cop killers, children killers. I mean, there's a very small sliver of death-eligible defendants that actually go to trial for the death penalty.
So, Jim, contrast this with the policy of the Trump administration.
Well, the biggest difference is when Attorney General Barr took office, they signed that death penalty protocol that I mentioned. So that essentially unlocked the process to allow for executions to take place. And, of course, none of these executions are particularly speedy compared to the end of the trial or the sentencing proceeding. But in the last 6 months or so of the Trump administration, there were 13 federal executions that took place. And by contrast, over the years of, I think, 17 years, of silence before that, it was kind of a noticeable uptick.
And one last question on this, Jim. Does this affect state trials and state executions, or is this strictly federal?
This is strictly federal, and with very rare exception, a federal defendant who's facing the death penalty is probably only facing it in federal court. We've had a few overlap situations like the Charleston Church massacre and Oklahoma City to go back to 20 years ago, 25 years ago. But this will affect federal prosecutions only, so the states that still have the death penalty are not affected by the Attorney General's actions.
What role would the personal beliefs of the Attorney General play in this, if any?
That's a great question. I mean, really, it shouldn't have any effect. And that's not to say that, that people can't have completely legitimate, heartfelt, religious or philosophical feelings about the death penalty. But if you're a constitutional officer, if you're the Attorney General, you've taken an oath to uphold the law as it is. And my view is then either change the law or uphold it. What I don't like about this pocket veto or these moratoriums is that it's kind of intellectually dishonest. It's putting your own judgment in place, finding a way to stop the enforcement of this law. And again, I'd rather it be through Congress than through the exercises of a few people that might feel strongly against it.
Well, Jim, there is another story on the legal front that dominated the headlines and will dominate the headlines. That is Cyrus Vance in New York versus the Trump Organization. And you have been gracious enough to agree to join us again in about 15, 20 minutes, and we will delve into that one. So, Jim, thank you for the contribution so far this morning. We'll see you again in a little bit.
Sounds good. Can't wait.
7 o'clock news is next. We'll also be joined in the next hour by John Gizzi. We'll also talk with KT McFarland and Tony Schaefer. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.